Hi, I'm Jillian Swinford.
And I'm Haley Brolison.
And this is Mother Nature Will Kill You,
a podcast about the most horrific tragedies
and the most triumphant survival stories that the wilderness can provide.
So grab your backpack
and maybe a bottle of wine.
And let's go on a wild ride into the unknown.
Walking down this road I go, but I am going alone. Running far, far from home, till I am but skin and bone. I don't wanna die, but I'll have to try. Oh, I don't wanna die, but I'm on my own.
Hello.
Corey's featured.
We have a special guest that has been on several times before as a stand-in whenever Haley gets COVID.
It was one time. It was one time I had COVID, knock on wood, because I don't want that shit again.
And it's my husband, Corey.
Hey, yo.
And
bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
It's me, your boy. And he's on today because we have a very special episode, because it is spooky season, and I'm pretty sure this comes out maybe the week before Halloween, I think.
Yeah, that's about right.
And so this needs to be the spookiest season of all. And so we are revisiting one of our favorite places collectively, the Appalachian Trail in the Appalachian Mountains. So.
Yes.
Well, before we get into that, this is my first time being somewhat face-to-face with Haley. Congratulations!
Oh, true.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Corey. I see Jillian all...
A passerby in the background.
That's right.
Yeah. I see Jillian all the time, so it's a collective congratulations whenever she says anything.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thanks, yes. That's exciting. Yeah, can't wait for you guys to come down and hang out. And
I know, we're excited too. We haven't been to the Keys since it was our very first big vacation together.
Yeah.
Like the first year we started dating.
Where we tested whether we could be in a car with each other for that long.
And you can.
And we can.
Remember like the EpiPen safety next time, or whatever your diabetes.
Well, I just won't walk into the water with my insulin pump.
Yeah, your insulin pen, not EpiPen, insulin pen. I was like, yes. I do remember that story. You just walked in the water with your insulin and you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Yep. And the look you gave me had me freaked out that there was something behind me in the water.
And you're like, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's behind me?
Like, where's the shark?
Oh, and it's
like, I was like, no, I just walked into the water with my insulin pump. And she was like, oh.
Like, oh, shit. Weren't you guys, like, didn't you say you were, like, in Sloppy Joe's, like, trying to make calls or something like that to, like, get it shipped down? Or what were you guys doing? Like, I have a vague memory. You said, like, you guys were, like, out at a bar trying to figure it out, too.
It was still working until we got back after we were at the...
You know, Jimmy Buffett's
R.I.P.
His not Margaritaville, but like the bar he used to go to is like Schooner's Wharf or something.
Oh, okay, yeah,
that's where we were at.
So we got fucking blitzed there,
blastered,
and then we came back to the Airbnb, and that's when I tried to take a little bit of insulin, and then it was like button stuck.
Oh.
Critical shutdown.
Oh god.
And so by then we were drunk, and we had to call my mom she had to call my mom because I was inconsolable.
Yeah. Oh. And I was like, this is like year one of our relationship, and everything I'm saying is not working. I'm gonna call his
yeah.
So she had to like talk me down, and she's like, you brought syringes, right? I was like, of course I did. She's like, well, then you're good.
Aww.
She's like, call them first thing tomorrow and have them overnight a new replacement pump. And they did. They gave me a temp pump for like, you know what, like 3 months or something like that.
Nice.
And they overnighted it, and it was crazy.
Yeah, everything worked out. They overnighted at to Key Largo, which was our next stop.
Yeah, it was at the Pelican Rest.
Oh, okay.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, they puddle jumped it in.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's great. We were at Fort Zach when that happened, by the way.
Yeah. I do remember that. That would be kind of funny if that's actually where we ended up having our wedding and you guys are like, ah, memories.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll probably go.
Well, now my pump, this pump is water resistant up to a decent amount. So like if I took a dip in the water, it wouldn't kill it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But does that include salt water, like corrosion?
Well, when I called them to get a new pump ordered, because it was time for an upgrade anyway, they said like, well, this one's good for, you know, swimming. And I was like, what about salt water? She's like, yeah, for salt water too. She's like, I would recommend you kind of wipe it off afterwards, but
yeah, like rinse it with fresh water afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
and
nice.
I've definitely walked into the bay when I'm doing seines and whatnot. And I'm like, oh, I'll be fine. I'm not going to go that deep. And then like, I take one step and I go, whoop.
Oh yeah,
and I'm like I pop shit. Back up. I'm like, well, pump's waterproof, so I guess we're testing that today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. I just want you to see this mug I got going on.
I love it. That's so cute.
Just my little pumpkin man.
That's nice. That's a cute one. I want to go get pumpkins so we can carve them.
I
like,
know.
Actually have like cute stuff around here, but it's we're not close. Like, yeah, where our house is, like in our neighborhood. The center of the neighborhood is like where the whole Halloween extravaganza occurs, and we're like right on the edge of the neighborhood, so like we're close enough to walk into all of the Halloween spooky fun stuff, but like our house isn't part of the decorations, you know, so I'm like, oh,
well, you can
decorate
make
it anyway
it.
I know
make it part of it.
I still want to like decorate it anyway, but yeah we'll see. Last year I was so excited to get like trick or treaters, and then I like realized that we don't get trick or treaters, and I was like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah. We need to get candy, speaking of.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
That's our next list, pay an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
We get enough that we need to have candy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. We have, I think it's probably one of the nicest neighborhoods in the town we live in.
We have people that actually come from like other like the neighboring cities will actually come to like our area.
Oh,
trick or treat.
Yeah. So
like,
sometimes our coworkers will just show up and they're like, hey, can we use your bathroom?
They're like, can we use your bathroom?
Come on.
And
you want
a
drink?
Yeah.
I'm like, you guys want shots
for them? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, anybody want coffee?
Yeah. So it's not bad. I think it's because this is like the rich neighborhood. And
gotcha.
I say that in air quotes because not everybody here is wealthy. But everybody
enough.
Here is enough.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
But we have a bunch of like crazy big houses on the water. And so I bet they give out like full size candy.
I was going to say they give the full size ones out.
How does this not cripple your economy?
Yeah. So, oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, if you see me like looking off into the distance, it's because we're watching a foster puppy right now.
Oh, I saw.
Yes. And so she's not entirely house trained, so we just went on like a long walk and we played outside and she like, you know, did her business and everything, but I'm still very like eyes on her. And then
yes,
Waylon out here too, so Waylon's trying to like settle down as well, but you know.
She looks very cute. She
oh, Waylon,
she's like I'll show you later, but she's
you
like
saw.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I'm friends with her on Facebook.
Yeah,
and TikTok.
Yeah.
All right.
Instagram. I didn't post it on TikTok, but it's on Instagram, which goes over to Facebook too. Waylon, stop it. I need to open one. Let me open at least one door for him. I'm going to open the front door so they can go in and out. Oh, and also they're doing a prescribed burn literally right next to us today. So that's fun.
Oh, fun.
It's fine.
Yeah. She is so cute. She's like
she
a little
really cute.
A brindle.
Mm.
And she's not loud. At all. Like she whines when you put her in her kennel at night for like a little bit, but then like she'll settle down. But like she's like not a loud puppy, and like she's not very hyper, which is awesome. Like she's hyper like outside of the house when you're like playing with her or like taking her on a walk, but like when she's inside she's just like hanging out. So, and she's 4 months old.
Wow.
I know,
it's a big
like,
dog.
Great. Yeah, I know, she is gonna be a big dog.
Yeah, I could never foster.
You couldn't?
No,
Oh, because you'd fail.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd fail
immediately.
Too. I've already told Alex because her name is Ginger, and he's like, I don't really like her name. And I was like, yeah, but if we keep her, we can name her Dolly or something. And he just like looked at me, and I was like, I said, if. Like, I know we're not going to do that, but like, you know, it's fine. She's cute though. She has a foster mom. Her foster mom is just out of town for the weekend.
So we're truly puppy sitting.
Yeah. And then Alex's friend is like one of the managers at the SPCA. So like she just texted us and was like, I don't have anybody else on my list. Like they're all out of town. So I was like, yeah, sure. I was like, I'll ask Alex because, you know, it's puppy and he does not like dogs in the bed and everything and them peeing all over the house. So I'm like, I want to help. I just have to sway his opinion, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like, I'm fine with dogs in the bed. I don't want them to sleep in the bed with me.
Yeah.
They need to be in their own bed.
Except for like the occasional nap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like,
yeah, dog hair and dog farts and in the way.
Especially
and
this pusher. It's more that,
like, they'll just take over the whole bed somehow, and then you get no sleep. Like,
yeah, no, that's very fair.
This little 40-pound bulldozer will push you off the bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, Waylon, we've worked Waylon into, like, just sleeping on his dog bed next to the bed. But, like, during the day, if we're in the bed, like, he can hang
He's
out.
He's in the bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Same. Our top blanket smells pretty doggy.
Oh yeah,
we need to wash it.
Yeah, the prescribed burns going right across the street. Alex just texted me because he's working today, and they are literally at the corner starting the burn. So he's like, nice. You can come down and watch it if you wanted to, and he forgot that we were doing this today, so I was like, I would.
And you're like, great, I'd love to watch things light on fire.
I mean, I do like lighting things on fire. I do like watching things burn.
We have like our second front today. So it's actually like
moldy
and a little crisp.
Our AC is not running probably for the first time in 6 months.
That's nice.
So that's really nice. This weekend's gonna be pretty nice.
I'm gonna be cooking brisket after this.
Ooh, that's nice.
Yeah,
we'll see. Got, like, it's my first time, so we'll see.
Oh, okay. I'm sure it'll be great. You're a good cook.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know.
Let's not talk about the few times I turned ribs into charcoal.
Yeah, that happened.
That's fine. I burnt a kielbasa the other night because I took my eyes off of it while I was chopping onions. And that's like hard to do, I feel like.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? I was like, oh, shit. My goodness, just let it burn accidentally. Oh, well.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the last time I was around a prescribed burn was a few years ago at my old place. And like they were literally burning right behind us. And like, I don't know if you guys have ever been like in a prescribed burn, but like the sky is orange. And ash falls from the sky. So I stepped out my front door to go to work. And I was like, holy shit, the world is ending. Like,
it's apocalyptic.
Yes, it is very creepy. So I'm kind of hoping it looks like that over there. But I don't know. It's probably just going to be all smoky and not like orange in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we've never been in one. But we've definitely watched them happen because down by where I work, they do prescribe burns all the time. And sometimes they get out of control, which is interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, there's a bunch of fucking weirdos that live on Big Pine. And one of them went to jail last night because they kept trying to put out the prescribed burn. Like, the Fish and Wildlife law enforcement officer was like, you can't be here, like, you can't keep doing this. And he's like, I'm just trying to put out the fire to protect my home, blah, blah, blah. And like after a few times, I guess he ran from them, and then he ended up in jail last night. So
hashtag Jess Keys stuff.
Yeah,
right. I know. That's a PSA to everybody out there. If you see a prescribed burn, it is illegal to interfere with that. So don't do it.
Meanwhile, idiots around here will light stuff on fire on the wrong days where the wind isn't doing the wrong thing. And
yeah, where the wind is like
field
blowing.
Comes on fire.
Oh, my God.
That's hashtag just Texas thing.
Yeah. Now that we've left our drought state because we got enough rain, like fires are popping up left and right. So everyone's burning all their yard trash. And some people just burn trash, just like instead of taking it to like a landfill, they're like, I'll just burn it here.
I'm
like,
I'll just burn these rubber tires in my yard. Like,
oh, that's such an awful smell.
Yeah, I'm like that. I'm sure your neighbors love you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we love you for that. all right, well, let's get into some spooky stuff. How do we want to do? Do you want me to get like the intense real stories out of the way first, so that you guys can come in with the fun, or does somebody want to go first?
I think you should do like your stories first, because that's kind of the I don't know, the design of the show, you know. Like,
okay.
You talk and then we come in after you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to clean up the sadness a little bit.
I mean, yeah, a little bit. Sure.
I'll come in last, so in case any of your listeners don't want to listen to a man, they can be like, "Ah, we're done."
Oh, I'm sure they're fine with that. But it's like, it is kind of funny, because it's like Corey and I are the golden retrievers of the show, and then Jillian is the black cat.
I'm definitely the black cat in this relationship, and you're the two golden retrievers playing in the background,
chewing on our own legs.
Yeah.
And I'm that puppy was doing that this morning, and I was like, oh my god, I forgot puppy things like that happen.
Yes.
And then she got the hiccups, and I thought it was cute.
I love that. They're like so confused. They're like, what is happening to my body?
Yeah.
All right, so I'll get started. I'm going to do a little brief, very brief recap on the AT. But if you want like a lot more in-depth information about the AT and all of the, you know, hiking aspects and all of the fun stuff that happens on the AT, go listen to our first episode on the Appalachian Trail. I should have pulled up what, oh no, it was called Thick Boy Mothman. Yeah, that is what it is called.
When I was looking up cryptids, I found this one site that has like all of these Appalachian cryptids, and Mothman was on there, and I was like, ooh, Thick Boy Mothman. my boy.
So if you want to go find that episode, it's called Thick Boy Mothman. It's about this time last year that we did it, and I went like super duper in depth into the AT. But today I'm just going to give a little brief recap, and then go into the story. Sure. All right, so the Appalachian Trail, and it is Appalachian, not Appalachian, for all of those who pronounce it wrong.
Educate yourself, fools.
Educate yourself. So the Appalachian Trail, or the AT, is the longest hiking-only footpath in the world, stretching from Katahdin Mountain in Maine to Springer Mountain in Georgia. And one of three through hikes across the United States, which also include the Continental Divide Trail and the Pacific Crest Trail. The total length of the trail is currently 2,194.3 miles, although this changes from year to year as different routes are added and subtracted. The trail runs through 14 states, including Georgia, Tennessee, North Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. So almost every East Coast state, pretty much north of Georgia. The approximate gain and loss in elevation is 434,500 feet, which is regarded as equivalent to hiking Mount Everest to sea level 16 times without the deadly altitude sickness issues.
How wild is that?
It's a lot of hiking. There are 3+ million visitors to the trail each year, and thousands of these visitors are thru hikers or those attempting to hike the entire trail. Ugh. And if you want to learn more about thru hikers, again, Thick Boy Mothman.
Yeah. I've always wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail. But you gotta have a lot of time on your hands for that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of time.
Same with the Pacific Crest Trail too. Yeah, a lot of time and a lot of money. And then there is a trail in Florida. It's the Gulf Coast Trail, I believe is what it's called. And I believe it's the all of Gulf Coast of Florida. I was like, oh, I could do that one too. But also, that's like a weather thing. You got to do it when it's cooler out here.
Yeah, there's and only like, that
yeah, it's always freaking hot.
Yeah. And like mosquitoes are a thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're just a thing.
Yeah. Always a thing.
I would love to hike a little bit of it and camp on the Appalachian Trail for like a little bit. But I don't think I'd ever want to do the whole thing. I'm too much of a homebody.
Yeah.
I mean,
you could break it up too. Like, you don't have to do it all the way through.
Yeah.
But still, it's like just piece by piece.
I have
Hard to do a piece by piece, though. I guess you would just like take a weekend and go as far as you can. And then hopefully you're in a city where you can get picked up. I don't know.
That's the thing. There's so much planning that goes into it.
I know. Yeah. God, that's a lot to think about.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do it like in between, you know, after they finish undergrad or high school, or in between like undergrad and grad school when they're just kind of floating, you know,
yeah,
take a gap year and do the AT kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, and I believe in Thick Boy Mothman, we talk about how there are people who like get the credit for hiking the whole trail, but they break it up, but you have to do it within like
a year or something
like a
like
year
that.
Or two or something like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is because they start the hike during like hurricane season.
Oh yeah.
Right.
And so they have to stop it to avoid, you know, dying out there.
Yeah. Oh, it's episode 44.
Oh, there we go.
So go. Yeah. So now you know it's episode 44. I think for me, like, an accomplishment would just be, like, hiking the Virginia portion alone.
Yeah.
Right? I know. Like, that's a long-ass, that's a long part of it. Isn't that, like, a quarter of it?
It's a pretty big chunk. I think the biggest parts are, like, the North Carolina-Tennessee, like, border, Virginia, and then Pennsylvania are the longest sections, it looks like. Maybe Maine too.
Yeah, Virginia definitely looks like it's about a quarter of it.
Yeah.
I'm doing girl math right now, and I'm like taking the image and like finger lengths to see. How
you're like, it's a quarter.
Yeah, it looks about a quarter.
And you're like,
that looks like... I'm like, it's this long on the picture, so I'm just
girl math.
Well, I mean, like, if I do girl math on this and I take that distance from Virginia, it looks like that covers like
it's
all
a big...
of Pennsylvania up to like Massachusetts.
Yeah, it's a big
like
chunk.
A third.
Yeah, so if I did that, I feel like I'd be pretty proud of myself.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And it wouldn't take as long too, so take like a month as opposed to like 7 months.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah,
but crazy. A lot of work, a lot of time, and it is somewhat dangerous and very hard on your body.
And there's
sure.
A lot of creepers that are out there too.
Right.
I don't know. Like, I just don't, like, yes. And you're probably going to talk about those creepers in a second.
And mountain lions.
I don't think there's as many mountain lions on the Appalachian Trail.
Not that you've seen.
Okay.
Bobcats.
They're always
definitely
out there.
Bobcats, right?
And there's definitely black bears.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm less scared of black bears than cougars, though.
Yeah. So he decided to get real freaked out about mountain lions like right before we went to Big Bend.
Huh. That's a fun time to decide to be afraid of mountain lions.
It's like my head was on a swivel the entire time.
Yeah. It's funny.
Anytime I heard the bird, like I heard no noise, like the birds stopped chirping, I just started like just whipping my head around. Like, where is it?
Oh my God. It's like that scene from Parent Trap where she's like clicking the sticks together. Meredith is.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever watched The Parent Trap?
I don't think he has.
I've seen The Parent Trap. I just don't remember
it. All right.
Oh, there's a scene when like Lindsay Lohan is like tricking Meredith that there's like a cougar or something around. And she's like walking around with two sticks, like clicking them together, like telling the cougar to go away or whatever that they thought it was. But it was like really Lindsay Lohan, like just making noises, like the other twin. She's like making noises. It was something like that. Like, I don't know. Yeah, that wrong. But I do remember her like clicking sticks like around like like Corey walking down like the trails and yeah, Ben, just like clicking sticks, like, click, all clicking sticks,
just going yeah, ha, ha, ha.
Just like every couple of steps.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at this little poopy butt.
Just a She's handful a of rocks.
Oh,
oh my goodness.
That's baby. There's I want that baby one. See, I'm not even fostering the dog and I'm like already a foster.
Okay, I'll take that one.
Literally only seeing her through the shitty Zoom video and I'm already like sold. I'm sold. All right. So there are many instances, however, that happen to hikers utilizing the AT, but not through hiking, because that's also possible. We've done it a few times, just mm-hmm. day hiking. So while through hiking, the hole can take up to 7 months or more. Many hikes along the AT may be just a day, a couple of days, or even just a few hours. Popular day hikes include Blood Mountain in Georgia, Mount Katahdin in Maine, and McAfee Knob in Virginia. But McAfee, is that how you pronounce that? Is it McAfee or McAfee?
I mean, if it's McAfee, then it's funded by the antivirus software.
Yeah.
I forgot all about that. That's funny.
Yep.
McAfee
Knob in Virginia. But one of the more dangerous, quote unquote, short hikes on the AT is the deadly Mount Washington in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
So Mount Washington is the fourth highest mountain on the whole trail at 6,288 feet. So it's shorter than Mount Mitchell, which we've done.
Ayo.
But it is far deadlier. It is located in Mount Washington State Park in central New Hampshire. It is also the most dangerous mountain in the United States.
Oh, really?
Yes. Not just
the AT. Oh, we've talked about this before.
Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned it briefly last time we did this.
Yeah.
But I wanted to delve into that because it's like, how is this little tiny blip the deadliest mountain when we have like fucking like Denali, you know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, Mount Rainier.
Is
right?
It the like altitude sickness part of it? No. Mm-mm.
So this mountain's got like a Napoleon complex?
Kind of, except
it looks short, but it's really like actually tall.
It's not tall. It's not. It's
short.
Mount Mitchell. Which
it's
is
short. Fine. It's just mean.
It's mean.
Oh, it's short and mean.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah. So it has taken the lives of 160 people in total. Again, this is surprising as it is not America's tallest nor the most technically difficult to climb, but it does contain some pretty interesting stats that combine to make it incredibly deadly to the average person.
Oh.
So, get a little picture. She's frosty.
It's a cold bitch.
Yeah, but it doesn't look girl. Like...
No, it doesn't.
And it's the deadliest. And I double checked that stat 100 times because I was like, there's no fucking way it's the deadliest.
That looked like a cloud, honestly, when I saw that picture.
Yeah, I know.
I was like, oh, that's a nice cloud. But
it looks like a nice, like, postcard background.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't think.
A desktop background.
Yeah.
It comes programmed onto, like, a Dell.
Yeah.
Computer. Yeah, that's Mount Washington. It doesn't look scary.
No, it doesn't.
It really doesn't.
Yeah,
so
I
it is.
Think that's the deadliest one, but now I know.
Yep. Now you know. So first, it is home to the worst weather in the world, quote unquote. It's not the worst weather in the world, but it is definitely up there. Like conditions get like the South Pole sometimes.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. So it is incredibly windy. And in 1934, a wind speed of 234 miles per hour.
Jeez.
Was recorded on the mountain, making it the highest wind speed ever recorded in the U.S., and that includes Alaska.
Is that Cat 5?
That's like beyond
Cat 7.
Cat 5. Cat 22.
Cat 22.
Like, it's not... That is, like, yes, definitely hurricane speed.
Yeah.
Because hurricane speed is 75 miles per hour.
Well, yeah, and then I think I'm gonna look this up because it's gonna bother me. But I think Cat 5 is like something like 150 or something like that.
Cat 5 is 157 miles per hour.
I was close. 234.
Yeah, that's like a Cat 10.
That's like 70 miles faster than a Cat 5 hurricane.
Yeah. So like a Cat 8.
Yeah. So the mountain regularly sees hurricane force gusts more than 100 days a year on the summit is hurricane force winds. More than 100 days on the summit.
Wow.
In addition to wind, the summit observatory has recorded temperatures as low as negative 50 degrees Fahrenheit with wind chills of 102 degrees Fahrenheit.
And this is all part of the trail? Like, they have to go through this mountain to...
Mm-hmm.
I would skip it.
It's right... yep, it's right on... If you look at the map, the AT is that red dotted line.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. So it's part of, so you have to be real smart about when you do it is the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you do that area in the summertime and then the south in like the winter or fall because.
Yep. Because it's incredibly dangerous. But yeah.
Well, that sucks. Imagine like starting the AT and thinking like you could do it in the wintertime up north and then you like get to Mount Washington and you're like, all right, I'll try again next year.
Well, and that's the thing is that sometimes the weather on the summit is way colder than what it is below.
So are they going to the summit and over and down as part of like the Appalachian Trail?
Yeah. You can do that. There's a lot of different routes you can take. Just like really any mountain summit has different routes. Yeah. But I think with the AT, yeah, you're doing like the ridgeline basically.
Gotcha.
So, but we're talking about a day hike today, a day hike gone very wrong / interesting. Yeah. So Mount Washington also recorded the coldest wind chill in the United States. Yes, colder than Alaska, of negative 108 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
And I double checked that stat too, because I was like, I honestly don't believe that.
Like, how does it get to negative 108?
Yeah. And why does Mount Washington have such terrible weather?
You like Googled and, that? Oh, yeah. And it's right there in the, yeah, I see it too. Why does it have such terrible weather, Jillian?
So supposedly because this mountain rises at the intersection of like several major storm tracks, it like forms a barrier to the winds from the west, which have blown unbroken for like hundreds of miles across like the flat areas of the country. And the Great Lakes. And that's the reason why it's so cold, but I'm still like, gosh, that's still crazy to me.
Yes. Yeah.
So in addition to wind and cold, it also averages 280 inches of snow that can cause drifts that are up to like 10 to 40 feet in depth when combined with those like extreme wind speeds. So lots of precipitation, lots of wind, and very cold temperatures. That's the combo. But probably the most deadly aspect of this mountain is that it is easily accessible from several major cities, including New York and Boston. They're only a couple of hours away.
So a lot of people probably go there for like a day to get outside.
Which is uncommon for... like the Rocky Mountains are not that way so much. Yeah. And a lot of the people that live in those cities are more experienced hikers anyway, whereas all of us softies on the East Coast, you know, we're used to the Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah. Right?
So we're not like preparing for crazy, crazy weather.
Yes.
And so a lot of people come very unprepared. And the height is deceiving compared to the large 14ers of the Rocky Mountains or the 20,194-foot Denali. There are a lot of visitors that may be completely underprepared in coming to the mountain.
may not be experienced mountaineers. 250,000 people visit Mount Washington each year. You can take the Mount Washington Cog Railway all the way to the top. And this railway has been in place since 1868. But many attempt to hike it as it is, again, not that tall. But its elevation is somewhat deceiving. In addition to weather, avalanches are also common. And 25 people require rescue assistance from avalanches a year.
Oof. Oh, wow.
Weather at the summit is often deceptively different than at the base. It can be warm and sunny down below and snowy and windy at the summit. The hike itself involves some serious elevation gain, 4,000 feet over 4 miles, which makes it feel more like climbing a 14er than an Appalachian mountain.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Average hike time for Mount Washington is at least 8 hours, which can allow hikers to get lost, lose daylight, or lose the trails if they are snow covered. All of these factors combine to make a death trap to those who go unprepared. And even those who are prepared can face some serious challenges, like the story I'm about to tell you now. Love this picture of the summit.
It is really pretty, and it's like eerie at the same time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that like a building up there?
It's the observatory.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So because of all this crazy weather, they have a weather observatory up there.
Gotcha.
Which is good, because if they didn't, I think a lot more people would die, because they wouldn't have like real-time weather.
So forecast. Do people that hike Mount Washington, do they like bring oxygen with them? Mm-mm. Like, is that the thing? Like, you can do it without extra oxygen or whatever? Yeah. Okay.
Again, it's shorter than Mount Mitchell, which Corey and I have climbed.
and my mother, who had like an injured foot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
6,288 feet.
Yeah.
Because Mount Mitchell is what?
I don't know. It's in the 6,000 range too, but it's a couple hundred feet taller.
Yeah.
But like, you're not even broaching the death zone. Not even kissing it, you know?
Yeah.
Like you're on a date and you're getting friend zoned. That's what this is.
Yeah, it's like almost 6,700 feet.
Yeah.
Mount Mitchell.
Oh wow.
It's like just short.
Yep. So it's just very surprising.
Yeah.
And I think that's the issue, is a lot of people don't know.
Yeah.
When they go to it.
No, before you go.
Mm-hmm.
Not wrong. So today we're going to talk about Pam Bales and her rescue of an unnamed individual on Mount Washington. And
she rescued somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'm going to give a little trigger warning here.
Damn it.
Okay. For people who don't want to hear about taking one's own life.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Can I subscribe to that trigger warning?
Sure. Just pop off.
You have Corey today, so.
Yes. So yeah, I'm gonna start out with the bummer, and then you guys are gonna come in with a 1-2 punch of fun spooky shit.
Okay, I'm already bummed. But okay.
This one is really surprising. It'll surprise you.
Ugh.
So in October of 2010, experienced hiker Pam Bales decided to set out on Mount Washington's Jewel Trail to summit Mount Washington, a mountain she had climbed many times before. She grew up in Lincoln, New Hampshire, living in New Hampshire's White Mountains from a young age, and had volunteered for the Pemigewasset Valley Search and Rescue Team. I know I butchered that. For 5 years prior to this incident, she was prepared for whatever the mountain would throw at her with warm clothing and layers. She left a note detailing her itinerary on the dashboard of her car, and had also left the same note with two of her search and rescue friends.
Smart.
Right? She would start up the Jewel Trail, traverse the ridge along the Gulfside Trail, summit the mountain, follow the Crawford path down to the Lakes of the Clouds hut. Oh God, descend the Emmaunusic ravine trail and return to the car. She knew that bad weather was coming soon and she hoped to summit before then. She checked the summit forecast before heading up. Slight chance of showers, high in the upper 20s, wind chill 0 to 10 degrees, winds northwest 60 to 70 miles per hour with 60 to 80 mile per hour gusts.
Balmy.
Uh-huh. Conditions. Conditions were described as full-on winter by the summit observatory. She had a contingency plan to turn around and forego the summit if need be. So this is a picture of her at the beginning of the hike that day. So there is snow, but obviously it's not cold. Cold,
because she's in a sports bra.
Yeah. So
I'd already would have turned around. I can't handle the cold anymore.
Yeah.
It's very Texas. And so then that is the Gulf Side Trail.
Oof, it's what a trail?
Ridgeline. Yeah. There's no trees. There's no protection. It's above the tree line. So at about 5,000 feet, thick clouds were surrounding the summit area. And the wind picked up hard around her, snow blowing in her face. She was adding layers, but the weather was continually getting worse as wind gusts plummeted her and the temperature dropped. Around 5,500 feet at 10:30 a.m., she reached the Jewel Trail junction with the Gulfside Trail and noticed fresh footprints in the snow. They had been made by sneakers, not hiking boots, which Pam knew was not the actions of a prepared individual, and she silently scolded them in her head. But she moved on towards her goal as there was no one in sight. At 11 a.m., she was getting cold through all of her layers, and even though she was moving fast, she decided to abort her plan due to the weather. She stated summiting was just an option, but returning to the SUV was not. Which is a pretty good opinion to have as far as doing kinds of dangerous outdoor stuff is concerned. Because I feel like too many people don't have that.
Yeah.
They get like summit blind.
Yeah.
Like, well, I'm here.
You know, yeah.
I have to do it. And I like to err on that side of caution, actually.
Oh, yeah. No, it's smarter.
Yeah.
Like, you can always go back on another day.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
like
it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you can't go back if you're dead.
Well, that's why I decided to propose to you at the little river walk behind Boulder Rock rather than going up to Spy Rock when it was raining.
It was pouring down rain.
That's honestly smart, Corey. Smart.
It was the second smartest decision I made that day.
Oh, what was the verse?
Honestly, I'm happy that we didn't do Spy Rock because I would have looked like a hot mess.
That was the other thing I was thinking about. I was like, I know you hate that one, but
I do.
The picture, the landscape picture would have been great, but she would have been miserable in the photo.
Yeah.
I would have been like, you fucking made me climb this damn trail that I
just
hate.
To propose to me. I
would have rather done Crabtree Falls. God,
that's funny.
Anyway, so here's a photo of Pam just before she decided to turn back. So very different look, aesthetic.
Yeah. Yes.
Then at the bottom,
bundled up there.
Yeah. And like in like good gear too, not just like, oh, let me throw my puffer jacket on. Like,
oh yeah, like Gore-Tex kind of gear.
Yeah. So as she abandoned her summit plan, she was getting hit with heavy sleet, fog, and gusts of wind at 50 miles per hour. And temperatures had plummeted to 27 degrees Fahrenheit. And she saw the tracks again in the same spot. She knew these people would not be able to navigate in the low visibility, especially if they weren't wearing proper clothes. She followed the prints and found a man slumped against the ground with his back against a boulder. He was only wearing a thin jacket, a t-shirt, and soaked shorts, all covered in a thin layer of snow and ice.
Oh, gosh.
He was breathing, but his skin was white, and he was barely cognizant, clearly hypothermic. She realized her hike had turned into a full-blown rescue mission. She grabbed her extra layers, changing the man out of his wet clothes and tucked hand warmers inside his shirt and his shoes. She put him inside the bivouac bag with more hand warmers and fed him her thermos of hot chocolate mixed with electrolyte cubes, which sounds disgusting, the moment, right? It would work.
What is a bivouac bag? Those like sleeping bags, like sleigh looking things where they drag them behind you?
It's, I think it's like those really thick, I can look it up. It's supposed to be, I think it's just like essentially like a really thick sleeping bag that you can like completely cover yourself in. Oh, hi, baby.
Oh, it's like a mummy bag.
Kind yeah.
of. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, it's smart that she had it because people do get trapped up on the summit sometimes.
She's a prepared girl.
Yeah. So it's like a tent. You're not going to be able to see that, but it's like a tent mixed with a sleeping bag.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tented top, sleeping bag.
Yeah.
Bottom or shape, I guess.
Yeah. I'm thinking about hot chocolate with like
electrolyte. With Gatorade.
Yeah. It's like tangy, but chocolatey. Like, oof.
Hot cocoa, like lemon, lime.
That's what I was going to say. It's probably like a chocolate covered lemon or something.
Jeez. I mean, he's like barely conscious. So, like,
fierce grape. Yeah.
Beggars cannot be choosers in that scenario, that's for sure.
So he was passive this whole time, still hardly noticing her presence. She decided to call him John, like John Doe, as he was her patient now, and she needed something to call him.
Or so. John Snow.
Funny. So funny.
That's why I'm here.
But <Ba-dum-bum.
laughs> it took an hour before he could move or say anything, but eventually he said that he was from Maine, and when he left his house it was 60 degrees outside. He had followed the same loop as Pam, and he had done it before. He said he was lost due to poor visibility and had just sat down. She knew they needed to get moving as the wind was picking up. She told John, after putting her micro spikes on his shoes, ordered, "You are going to stay right on my ass, John." Sounds like a very Jillian Swinford thing to say.
You're staying right on my ass.
I don't know. You tend to go off the beaten path or like go off ahead of me.
No, I'm just talking about like in any kind of
emergency situation. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know that is you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's you.
Also, I don't go off ahead of you because I'm usually like puffing and huffing.
Well, I'm thinking of like when we go kayaking and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You take off and like next thing I know, I go around and I'm like, oh, she's gone.
Or like when we go snorkeling.
Or when we go snorkeling.
A mile out into the ocean. You're like,
and I'm like, I'd like to see the shore.
Yeah. No, Alex has such like a long stride whenever we're walking. He's like thousands of steps in front of me. And I was like, okay, I'll just be back here.
Yeah. I mean, he's a tall guy.
He is though. Like his like normal stride is like twice as long as my full, like my normal stride. Like we'll go on a run together and like, I'm like, you know, I run slow and like you have a longer stride than me. So like, you're going to leave me behind. But also like, can you just like every once in a while, like look back, make sure I'm still okay. Like,
and then like our dog right
here.
It's okay.
Hey.
It's okay. Put that Spinosaurus down. You're good. Come here.
Hello. You're okay. There's nobody here.
She protect good.
Do good protect.
No. Okay. We're not doing that.
All right. Sorry. Very you were good. So rudely interrupted.
It's fine. It's Marzi. She gets a pass.
Mm-hmm.
All I was saying that like we try to run together, but like if he tries to run at my speed, it like hurts him because his stride, like he has to like actively try to like make his stride smaller for me. So I'm like, just go on without me. Like, it's fine. I was like, but also if I don't come home like 10 minutes behind you, like come looking for me.
All right. So you're going to stay right on my ass. So she followed the depressions from her trekking poles and was barely able to see them, but she managed to find her way back to the main trail. She would often ask a question, but at most he would only grunt in response. At one point, he sat down in the snow, appearing to give up, but Pam said, "We're in this together, and that is not an option, John. We still have the toughest part to go, so get up, suck it up, and keep going." She didn't usually speak this harshly to people, but she felt it was necessary to motivate him so he would keep moving. That is also a Jillian Swinford tactic.
Mm-hmm.
Would be a dick.
Yeah.
It was around 2 p.m. when they made it back to the Jewel Trail, starting down underneath the tree line. The sun was setting in 3 hours and it was getting dark, so Bales turned on her headlamp to offer some light. They descended slowly, and Pam would sing 60 songs to try to keep their morale up, offering encouragement to John, who she was afraid would drop in the snow and actively resist her efforts to save him. I'm just picturing her singing California Dreamin'.
Exactly. That's the exact song yeah. I was thinking, too.
All the leaves are brown.
Her mom texted me yesterday. It was like, we got a huge shipment of like vintage records in. And so she started giving me all the records that they got. She's like, which ones do you want? And I was putting in the list. And then I saw the Mamas and the Papas. And I looked up the record. And I was like, okay, it's got California Dreamin'. I need that one.
Nice. Yes.
So it's been stuck in our head since yesterday.
Yes. So it took 6 hours of them descending to reach the parking lot, and it was dark. She used her car heater to warm up John's clothes, and then they traded the layers that she had lent him. She asked why he didn't have extra clothes or food in his car, and he told her that he had borrowed the car. She asked, why didn't you check the weather forecast dressed like that? He didn't answer, thanking her and driving off. Pam was bewildered, wondering what had just happened. At that exact time, 6:07 p.m., the observatory clocked its highest wind gust of the day at 88 miles per hour.
Jeez.
Wow.
So this is the trail. So it's basically a loop that you can do, but they turned around somewhere on the Gulfside Trail and went back down the Jewel gotcha. Trail. She emailed her search and rescue teammates following the event, recounting the rescue and debriefed. There were so many questions and even less answers as to what John was doing on the mountain, ill-prepared and alone. Then, a few days later, a letter arrived at the SAR headquarters. It read, "I hope this reaches the right group of rescuers. I was called John. On Sunday, October 17th, I went up my favorite trail, Jewel, to end my life. Weather was to be bad. Next thing I knew, this lady was talking to me, changing my clothes, talking to me, giving me food, talking to me, making me warmer. And she just kept talking and calling me John, and I let her. I finally learned her name was Pam. Conditions were horrible, and I said to leave me and get going, but she wouldn't. Got me up and had me stay right behind her, still talking. I followed, but I did think about running off. She couldn't see me. But I wanted to take my life, not anyone else, and I think she would have tried to find me. The entire time, she treated me with care, compassion, authority, confidence, and the impression that I mattered. With all that was going wrong in my life, I didn't matter to me, but I did to Pam. She probably thought I was the stupidest hiker, dressed like I was, but I was never put down in any way. Chewed out, yes, in a kind way. Maybe I wasn't meant to die yet. I somehow still mattered in life. I became very embarrassed later on and never really thanked her properly. If she is an example of your organization and professionalism, you must be the best group around. Please accept the small offer of appreciation for her effort to save me way beyond the limits of safety. No, no did not seem in her mind. I am getting help with my mental needs. They will also help me find a job, and I have temporary housing. Mm-hmm. I have a new direction thanks to wonderful people like yourselves. I got your name from her pack, patch, and bumper sticker. My deepest thanks, John."
Aww. I'm gonna cry. So, I just got the chills.
I know. Yeah. And like when I was
that's
like,
deep.
I know. It's crazy. When I was like researching it, I was like, oh, like, you know, survival stories on Mount Washington. This was the first one that popped up. Yeah. I know there's a ton.
Yeah.
But like this one really stuck with me.
Yeah.
When I read it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because she just went up there to do her own thing and saw somebody and rescued mm-hmm. him. But
mm-hmm.
that's when you're a prepared, experienced hiker like that, you mm-hmm. probably feel like it's your duty to do that too. And mm-hmm. like as anybody else, though, like even as an unexperienced hiker, I think anybody would try to save another person
that yeah,
they see it's in need, you know?
Yeah, to do something. Yeah. Pam was deeply moved by the gesture and never actually found out the real name of the man that she saved. So he's still just John. Mm-hmm. Ken Norton, the executive director of the National Alliance of Mental Health New Hampshire, talked about the gravity of Pam's intervention, saying that John had borrowed a car and hiked to a spot where he felt would be past the point of no return, contemplating this the whole way. And because Pam came along and forced him to march back down the mountain, he drove away alive. And he didn't attempt to return the next day.
Good.
His story represents hope and resilience. Years after the rescue, Pam Bales is a White Mountain legend, a title she didn't ask for but deserved. This rescue has inspired the film Infinite Storm, released in 2020. Now in her 70s, Pam volunteers for backcountry patrols in national parks, mostly out west. She has stated that she thought about trying to find him, but then realized, I have in fact found John, and he is very close to me. John is my neighbor. He is my good friend, a close colleague, a family member. John could be me.
Aww.
And that is the story of Pam Bales and the White Mountain Rescue. That's crazy that somebody was like, this mountain is
yeah.
deadly. I'm going to use it to kill myself. That's how deadly this mountain is.
Yeah. That's sad, though. That's like a thought.
Yeah. Well, you have to be committed.
Yeah.
To do that.
Yeah.
That's not like an easy out.
Mm-mm.
You have to.
No.
Put a lot of effort and suffer through a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have heard this story, and I don't know if it's like a true story or not, but there's that guy who jumped off. One of the, I think he jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, and survived?
No, well, he died, but he had left a note in his car, and he had said, I'm going to this bridge the long way, and I'm going to jump off and kill myself. But if one stranger smiles at me today, I won't. Like, and not a single person. Like, so I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, like, that's a really weird rule. So I don't know if it's true or not, but it's just like, the feeling behind it is what I thought of immediately after this story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the whole, like she said, John is my neighbor. He's my good friend, a colleague, family member. John could be me. It's
anybody.
Everybody needs help.
Mm-hmm.
People just don't know how to ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the one where the guy jumped off in an attempt to commit suicide, but and he survived the fall, but was, you know, his body was broken. And a seal pulled him to shore.
No.
Like a sea lion.
Is that the one that just kind of came out?
No.
No. I'm thinking of a different story involving a sea lion.
No. Anyway, that's what I thought you were talking about. Nope. And I was like, yeah, the one where the seal saves him. The seal and Pam, they're the same.
Nope.
But yeah, I mean, it's true. I feel like, you know, we have somewhat lost that sense of community.
We have.
Yeah, like nobody smiles at each other going down the street. I mean, think about how many people that he probably passed on his walk to his end, you know, and nobody freaking smiled at him.
Yeah.
Like, not even like a, hey, man. Like,
yeah.
Like a head, like one of those head nods.
Yeah.
Ugh,
so, that's why I always get those awkward, like.
I
do the awkward too. I'm like.
Was that?
Yeah.
It's very Midwestern of me, I think.
But I mean, I always do that too. I always try and give people a genuine smile. But, you know, with me being a guy with a beard, I have to be careful
mm-hmm.
with my smile. Because I don't want to give people, I don't want to freak someone out too much.
Yeah.
Yep. Don't want to give that creepy vibe.
I was watching, this is going to sound super stupid, but I was watching Hey Arnold this morning. And there was like, do you remember? I don't know if you guys ever watched Hey Arnold growing up,
Oh,
but
yeah.
there's this episode where like Arnold learns karate and then like he just is like very defensive and always like wants to like chop people, you know?
It's
And
mimicking Taxi Driver when he starts doing,
oh, is that what that is?
when he's doing like, you
Oh.
talking to me?
Yeah, you talking to me? Yeah. Yeah,
Mm-hmm.
so like you know, this guy, random guy on the street just comes to ask him like where the bus stop is or whatever, and then like Arnold like chops him up, take like rips all his clothes off and everything, and the guy's like, I just wanted to know where the bus stop was. And I was like, oh man, like I've gotten soft because I even feel for cartoon characters now. Like that's sad.
So, speaking of Mount Washington, I have a list of preparations.
Oh yes, please.
Yeah, in case anybody wants to do this for funsies, consider going with a guide. Guided hiking is a great way to learn about the mountain safety and support the local economy. That's actually a good point.
Yeah.
On the morning of your hike, check the weather forecast at the Mount Washington Observatory or using a reliable weather app. Wear adequate footwear that you've broken in, such as hiking boots. Dress in hiking layers suitable for winter, even if it's warm at the base. Carry plenty of water in a hydration bladder, which, who named that? Whose idea was that?
A camel back.
It's a camel bag, or several water bottles, and sip frequently. Use trekking poles to help you hike more efficiently and to support you on the steep downhill. Consider booking a shuttle to take you downhill, but you must reserve in advance, as 80% of all mountaineering accidents happen on the descent, which every single one we've talked about happens on the descent.
That's true. I
Yeah.
mean, because like your legs are tired, and then like you're not, I don't know, downhill, your feet don't grip well, you slide, you slip, you fall, whatever.
Yeah.
And as the day gets closer to night, just everything gets more
Darker.
dangerous.
Yeah. That's like, you know, the worst times or the most dangerous times to drive is in the wee hours as the sun is rising, and then the later in the day when the sun is setting, because it just causes that like glare and like you can't see. Yeah.
Well, and you're thinking like, hey, this is easier, right?
Less people on the road, and then a hog comes out of nowhere and
No, I'm talking about like on your descent, you're like, oh, I've done the hard part, now it's the easy part, so you're not like as focused.
then a hog comes
Yeah.
out onto the
It
trail.
squeals and scares you.
And I will put some suicide support, suicide hotlines on the show notes as well, and at the end of this episode.
That's a good idea.
Because we need to be the Pam Bales in this situation. Yeah.
Yeah.
My sources were Danger Zones, Mount Washington, by Douglas MacDonald, from the Mount Washington Avalanche Center. Why is Mount Washington so dangerous? From Juliet Clark, adventure.com. The Mystery on Mount Washington by Pam Bales, for Backpacker. Emotional Rescue, AMC staff, Appalachian Mountain Club. The story of Mount Washington Rescue makes it to the big screen, but the mountain does not. David Brooks from the Concord Monitor. And Footprints in the Snow lead to an emotional rescue by Ty Gain. The union leader. So that those are my sources.
Nice.
All right. Somebody's up.
I can go if you
Yeah, I want
want.
to hear about cryptids.
All right. I'm just gonna pull up the site that I had all of them on, so I can just mention all of the ones that are in the Appalachian. I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning this morning, and then this is what I was doing. So
Hope you didn't wake up at 4 to do this.
no, I didn't wake up at four to do that. I just woke up, and like we kept the puppy in a kennel out in the living room, and I left my phone in the living room because I was like, oh, like it's my Saturday. I don't want my phone like blowing up or like bothering me. So like I just kept it out of the room. And then I freaking woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I was like, God damn it. Like just staring at the ceiling. Like, and then I had to go to the bathroom, and I was like, man, I know if I go out there, she's gonna like hear me, and then she's gonna like get up and whine, and I hope it's not bad, you know? And so then I had my iPad in the room. So I just was like on my iPad looking up all this stuff because I was like, well, might as well put myself to use if I'm going to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
Okay, so there are a variety of cryptids that live along the Appalachian region. So the Wampus Beast is one of them, and that is around West Virginia. There's the Wolfman in mm-hmm. Kentucky. Bigfoot has also been known to be seen.
Bigfoot's everywhere, man.
Yeah, throughout the area. Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia, and West Virginia is primarily where they are. That one is. They have a thing called the Smoke Wolf. And they have Mothman, obviously Mothman. Big Boy Mothman. The Grafton Monster, Raven Mocker, Silver Giant, Cherokee Death Cat, Grimms, and the Knot Deer is not on this, but the Knot Deer is also one of them. So I'm going to talk about the Knot Deer, and I'm on Cryptid Wiki, so
that's the only reliable source for
that's what I've been using recently, honestly. But then I also found someone's it's called knotdeermagazine.com, and it's somebody's blog post about the Knot Deer.
Just dedicated to Knot Deer.
Yeah, or like cryptids, I guess, I don't know. But yeah, so the description of the Knot Deer is that it looks like a deer from a distance, like a large white-tailed deer. Mm-hmm. And the closer it gets to people, they start realizing that like something is just like a little bit off about it. The movements are described as being like a newborn deer, but the deer appears as an adult. So it's like that like
wobbly
kind of staggered walking,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, if it's dark out and it looks like an adult, that kind of seems creepy, right? Because you're like, mm-hmm. Why are you like kind of staggering towards me?
Mm-hmm.
Some accounts suggest the creature is double jointed or has additional joints in its limbs.
Mm-hmm.
But the limbs are described as longer than those of a deer, and the chest is very barrel-like. The way it moves is said to be aggressive compared to that of a deer. The most defining feature is that the Knot Deers do not have eyes on the side of their head, but rather in the front like a predator.
Yes. So
that's like what people mean by like, by the time it gets closer to you, you're like, oh, that's like a little weird because like you didn't uh-huh. see that the eyes are like in front of their mm-hmm. head. This distinction is usually the first thing noticed as off. A few accounts involve multiple eyes throughout, or multiple eyes, though most do not. So some people say there's multiple eyes. Some are mm-hmm. saying no, though. So it's just the two in the front. Other uncommon outliers to the typical account involve describing the head as bovine. So that's like your cow.
Okay.
Their behavior, they're not afraid of humans.
Mm-hmm.
Those who encounter them state to have an uneasy feeling that there is an intelligence and an emotion about them that furthers the feeling that like something is off. Because mm-hmm. obviously you like want animals to be afraid of you so they don't come to you.
mm-hmm. Well, and deer are a prey species, and you know, some of them aren't afraid of humans, but a lot of them are because we do still hunt them, you know.
Yes. The Knot Deer will generally approach humans, and it's because of this that the odd movements are noted. Despite mm-hmm. encounters feeling off, the creature has only been reported to attack if provoked, such as when an encounter tries to scare them off. Some accounts of such involve being chased up a tree by the Knot Deer. The Knot Deer may walk on its hind legs for a bit, as some animals may do, in order to intimidate or in attempts to reach individuals who are chased up trees.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get into the witnesses. So the Knot Deer accounts are primarily found on Reddit, but after getting attention seeped in recent years to TikTok and other sites. Usually sightings are on roads, such as a case of driving alone on a motorcycle on the Appalachian Road and seeing in the road what looks like a deer, but becomes very obvious not a deer mm-hmm. as it or the encounter gets closer. And then we talk about explanation. So why is this happening? How is this happening? So Knot Deer encounters are suggested by skeptics to be encounters with deer who have birth defects causing mm-hmm. unusual walking patterns and head shape. The feelings reported by those who claim to have encountered Knot Deer are thought to be the result of isolation, sleep deprivation, and other factors.
I mean,
you know, you start drugs. Seeing things. Yeah, when you go a little crazy. And there's a lot of drugs that go on up there.
Yeah, I'm looking at like fan art, and it's so varied. It's interesting because this is like kind of a new-ish cryptid that it's kind of akin to like Slenderman almost.
Oh yeah,
it's like born in some ways on the internet.
It's been populated by the internet. It was always a like a Native American, like they had stories about that with like shape changers and whatnot, but
like no one else. Everyone's heard of like Bigfoot,
yeah,
and like Mothman and stuff. But
well, it's because there's been such a in the last like what 15, 20 years, there's been such like an obsession with cryptids, mm-hmm. especially with like our generation mm-hmm. and whatnot.
Yeah,
that. A lot of this is coming to light, like a lot of these legends and this folklore. And one of the few good things about the internet is the quickly spreading of like ideas and information about things like this,
mm-hmm.
like people's obsessions and
yes. So it's just interesting. All right, sorry.
Continue. Yeah, no, you're good. I was just going to say like the other explanation for it is the chronic wasting disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is a common disease common disease within the deer community.
Mm-hmm.
So chronic wasting disease is also known as the zombie deer syndrome, and it's a suspected possible source for the not deer.
Well, and if you've seen pictures of deer with chronic wasting disease, you're like, yes. I can see. How well, that
I think it's a demon.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, it definitely, it's like a, I don't know how to describe it. I guess it's like a wasting disease. Like their tissue like starts
mm-hmm.
like sloughing off of themselves and like they Ooh. Have these like.
Good word.
Yeah. Right. They, they get these like these open wounds that are just yeah. like decaying yeah. and like, you know, their eyeball falls out. Like it's just gross.
Well, if you want me to read the official Center for Disease Control and Prevention definition.
Sure, so go for it.
It's a prion disease that affects deer, elk, reindeer, Sitka deer, and moose. It has been found in some areas of North America, including Canada and the U.S., Norway, and South Korea. It may take over a year before the infected animal develops symptoms, which can include drastic weight loss, stumbling, right?
Mm-hmm.
Listlessness or other neurologic symptoms. So mm-hmm. that like stilted walking.
And if it's affecting how their brain processes, then they're not going to necessarily see humans as a threat.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's something that I know has become more common because we don't have predators anymore to take out the like weak.
The sick and the
yeah. infected. And so it spreads more quickly through deer populations and communities, which is why
that's true.
Like management and hunting is actually pretty important.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue. Because that's my theory for the not deer.
Yeah.
They're throwing fire next door. Like literally just threw fire next door. Sorry, I got very distracted by that, but that was kind of cool. Sorry. Wow, that ADD hit. I saw a man walking down the street with like a flamethrower in his hand. And I was like, oh, it's happening.
It's beginning.
It's crazy. Good thing the dogs are inside. But anyway, yeah, chronic wasting disease, not deer, all that jazz. Uh-huh. That's my cryptid. Sorry, I got distracted.
No, it's all good.
I'm going to get even more distracted, so it's good that this is ending soon.
So yeah, I love this whole idea of the not deer mm-hmm. just because I think it really is just a way to explain chronic wasting mm-hmm. disease before we really had a way to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that like lore so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And if I ran into a deer with chronic wasting disease, like on the road in the middle of the night, I'd be like, this is fucking creepy.
Well, and that's the other thing, like oftentimes the way we interact with deer is usually at dusk or at mm-hmm. dawn, where like we're saying it's like kind of the creepiest time of day or night because the sun's just coming up,
mm-hmm.
so some things are waking up, the light is different, mm-hmm. you know, or if you see them at night, all you see is the glowing eyes, and that would be why people think that they've got like predator eyes staring at you, mm-hmm. because the way you're there is just reflecting the light
mm-hmm.
that you're shining.
Also, like the multiple eye scenario too, like if they did have chronic wasting disease and they were having like all of those open wounds around them mm-hmm. their head, mm-hmm. like that would probably look like a lot of eyes as well.
Yeah,
This is also reminding me, have you guys ever seen that video on TikTok? I know you have, but I don't know if Haley has, where it's this guy just filming, he's walking on the road, and all of a sudden he turns and there's this deer with what looks like a broken neck, and it just runs off in front of him.
Its head is like lolling like this.
And I'm like, maybe deer can function after they've broken their neck. I don't know, but it creeps me out every single time.
Well, they can run for miles on ruptured organs.
Yeah.
So they don't just, like, when they get hit by a car, they'll die like 10 miles away because they just run.
Yeah, that's true. And every time I see that, I'm like, it's a not deer.
Yeah.
Well, when I drive down Big Pine at night, I'm like, you know, there's deer around here. So I'm like, oh, am I going to see a not deer? Like, there's deer here.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that's a good one. All right.
See, and we have deer hanging out in the yard that's part of the nuclear power plant. So I'm still waiting to see like a two-headed deer or like a deer with a head for a butt or something.
I was gonna say those are probably real messed up.
They're actually not deer, but for a different reason.
Their DNA has changed, so they're no longer deer.
They're no longer deer. Yeah. All right. Well.
All right. Well.
For us.
I am continuing my exploration into the mystique of Appalachian folklore myself. I picked up this book, Appalachian Witchcraft for Beginners by Auburn Lilly. And it gives it's a woman who's been exploring her own background as a descendant, you know, as somebody who's like lived in Appalachia and everything and her family. And in this book, she talks about, she has like little anecdotal things about like her grandma doing this thing or that thing and her mom boiling up this one particular like liquid, not to drink, but just to like kind of wave around the house to cleanse it if somebody's like not feeling good or someone's anxious or something like that. So it's kind of cool. And this is only for like green witches. This is only for like the good earthbound magic, like medicine magic. Not in this book, they don't teach anything about dark magic or wishing misfortune upon others.
Satan.
Yeah. So just want to put that out there. I'm not delving into black magic yet.
Thank God.
That's next year. But the first thing that really stuck out to me about this is the fact that the Bible is actually very prominent in a lot of this green witch kind of stuff. And the main takeaway from that I've seen is that intention matters more than anything else when it comes to this kind of like earthy connecting to the land kind of magic. So as you're harvesting the herbs or you're harvesting the things from the earth, you have to have like a clear intention about what it's for. You don't want to over harvest. You take exactly what you need and you try and give back to the earth in whatever way you can. So there's that feeling of trying to form a community with the land rather than just taking from it.
Which is unusual for American.
Exactly. Yeah. But just like I was talking about last year, or last time I was on here with talking about this, a lot of this is just like a melting pot of different cultures of like Irish, Germanic, African, all kinds of stuff, because Native American, because the Appalachians were such a melting pot of cultures of people just moving up there because there was coal, there was some gold mining, and there was just land available that nobody else wanted to try and work. So especially in Psalms, going back to talking about the Bible, Psalms is used in a lot of witchcraft as kind of like a way to focus your mind, your intentions. And it also helped connect faith. So it's kind of what made green witches seem more like faith healers, which is also why in these small communities that were very religious along the Bible Belt, they weren't killed or persecuted because they were seen as using the Bible. So they were seen more as faith healers that use the earth, which inherently isn't bad.
Right. Well, it makes sense. Like that's
like in religious lore, that's what the earth is for,
right?
Right.
The earth, God provides through the earth. You're not supposed to hoard mana. You're supposed to use what you need mm-hmm. and give back what you don't mm-hmm. kind of thing. That was an aspect that I found very interesting. And then she goes on to talk about ways you can bring in your culture. So, for example, and I thought this was really funny. I was reading this at a boat ramp. If you have Irish background and you're doing some, if you're doing offerings on a table to help focus your spells or whatnot that you're doing, she's like, you may want to use like a potato involved in your spells or something.
Oh, because they're Irish.
Because they're funny. Irish. I'm like, oh, you want to do a shot of whiskey in there too?
Yeah. I don't know what mine would be.
I'm like, what am I supposed to use as German sauerkraut? Like,
yeah, bratwurst.
Definitely sauerkraut. I do good love old, some sauerkraut.
Good old lager.
Yeah.
But obviously she goes in talking about things to use from the land, you know, peppermint, sage, mm-hmm. Rosemary is actually a very purifying herb.
Mm-hmm. I do love rosemary.
Why I'm so pure,
eat so much rosemary. But another thing that was kind of funny is she talks about when you try to call upon your ancestors to help you and to form a connection with your lineage to help find your particular connection to the mountains and to the land. She's like, you want to make sure you call upon the ones with positive energy, because there are some of your ancestors, they're still trying to balance out their karma or their post living trauma that they're still trying. I'm like, great. So our anxiety continues past
the afterlife. God.
Yeah. I'm that like, I sucks. Love that. Love that for me. So,
well, it makes sense. That's why ghosts supposedly, you know, haunt the same places, because exactly. They're reliving past trauma.
So yeah. She says, like, as you're calling upon the ancestors, you may have to take little side quests to try and help balance their karmic.
Try to help them work through
help them, or at least help them find peace with it, like purify them through your rituals, mm-hmm. So that they can move on.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of this stuff is about just like a lot of the spells that she has in here, because part one is talking about the history and the culture behind it, and part mm-hmm. two of this book is a beginner's spell book, which I haven't had a chance to flip through, but a lot of it is, you know, bringing wealth and love into your life, cleansing yourself of bad thoughts, of bad feelings, cleaning your house of bad luck. And then a lot of it in the beginning is grounding yourself. So teaching you how to clear your mind, how to, you know, clear your mind, focus your thoughts, focus your intentions. Like I said, so she said, as you're doing your spells or your ceremonies, as you're, you know, quote unquote casting, you sometimes might kind of drift off as you're thinking about it. So you reassert yourself by like picking up lavender, like, I am using this lavender for peace. And then you put it in your jar. So it's like I said, it's that whole, like, the intention. You have to make your things clear. And she does warn you about when you do reach, if you do decide to like reach into the spirit realm, you have to be careful, because like in a lot of media, when you look out into the abyss looks back, kind of thing.
Yes.
So you have to be careful about what you're calling out for, and you have to be very specific, because some of those boogers out there, they'll try and find their way into affecting our world from the spirit realm through you, through your ritual. So you might accidentally, while become trying to possessed. Purify your house. Say what?
You might accidentally become possessed.
Exactly. Like, instead of trying to bring prosperity and peace into your house, you might bring in a curse or like bad vibes, bro. You bad know, that juju. Kind of stuff.
I sage my house every once in a while, and I did read online that you're supposed to like open your front door when you sage your house, so all the bad spirits can exit, because
so they have somewhere to cleanse. Go.
Yeah, they have somewhere to go out.
Yeah.
So yeah, I set an intention and then I walk around my sage. I'm like, all right, all you motherfuckers, get out of here.
Which probably helped, because you were stating your intention. You were very clear about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like no bad vibes in this house.
Right.
Only good ones.
That's right. But yeah, she mentions that when you try and purify your house, you need to have the windows and the doors open so they have places to escape from. And then they talk about, you know, when you do salt, it's a very purifying thing. And if you knock over salt, the reason behind, like, the superstition behind throwing it over your shoulder is because, did you knock it over, or is that just some bad luck of something sitting on you?
Oh.
Like some evil spirit that's attached itself to you, or malevolent, like little trickster. So you take that salt, you throw it over your shoulder, and you spook it away.
Oh, that's why people do that.
Mm-hmm. That's a reason why you do it. And another thing is when you sneeze, it was believed that that's your soul trying to leave your body.
Oh gosh.
So when you're covering your mouth or anything, like it's now seen as like a hygienic thing. But back mm-hmm. then it was believed that you're supposed to keep your soul from escaping. And when you say mm-hmm. bless you to someone, you're essentially like helping to bless the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, okay, I guess I'll stick around then.
That's crazy, because I was actually wondering why we say bless you when you sneeze.
Yeah.
Like the other day, I was like, how did that come about? Oh,
I believe it, because every time I sneeze, I do feel like my soul's trying.
You sound like you're dying when you sneeze.
Achoo!
I'm a scream sneezer.
So that's really funny, because I've watched The Simpsons probably about 30 times in my life, like all the way through. And there's one scene where Milhouse is talking to Bart about the soul. And he says, every time you sneeze, that's your soul trying to escape. But you say, bless you, to cram it back up there. And I remember watching that, and I'm like, oh, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. That's not real. Apparently it is.
Oh.
Those Simpson writers, they're onto something.
Yeah, they really are. They got it.
Yeah.
I should start watching, because I really watch The Simpsons, but I'm like, if I need to know when the next plague is happening.
What?
Yeah.
Or I bet they know. Election. Or the next election. Yeah, I bet they know.
That's right.
So I love how most of these spells are like very like, oh, you know, let's look into the future, or let's sage our house, or let's connect to the earth. But then we have a soothing tea for a sore throat, which is not a spell. Yes. It's just tea.
No, but instead of using medicine, it's a bunch of earthy things.
Which brings me to, I follow this girl on TikTok called, and she's the Appalachian Forager. And she...
Is she like the one that like
she
I don't
loves
know,
mushrooms? She does mushroom hunting.
Yes,
and
yes,
like, yeah.
The mushroom. Yes,
tinctures, yes. And it's like that is a very much an extension of this.
Yeah,
and, like they used all these herbs and stuff because in certain circumstances they are like natural medicine. Like, where do you think mm-hmm. we got medicine from? We just make synthetic versions of it, and that's more powerful. I'm not saying that you should use essential oils to solve your cancer, but you can use stuff that you forage to help with things like a common cold
day to day, or
I've been seeing a lot of the garlic and honey stuff mm-hmm. on TikTok recently, and how they're like, oh, put garlic and honey and then like let it sit for like a month or two. And then like whenever you feel a cold coming on, take a spoonful and like you'll mm-hmm. be fine, whatever.
Mm. Yeah.
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 I've seen a lot of that. Oh, and then my grandma has been soaking raisins in gin and taking like a handful of them at night, because she read somewhere that like helps like with, I don't know, whatever old people things helps, you know, whatever. And I read an article about it the other day, because it was like, I don't know, it came across my Facebook and I was like, oh, this really is a thing, huh? So
mm-hmm.
it's interesting. Raisins and gin, soaking them. And then I think they soak for like a couple weeks and then you can eat them or something like that.
I mean, that is the origin of cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
That they were medicinal before they were fun. Which is why gin is a big one, because it's got a lot of herbs
in it. And it's why those bitters were made, because those bitters are usually made from like,
they're like a tincture,
harsh herbs and whatnot that taste bitter and mm-hmm. make you pucker up. But then you mix it with a little bit of liquor and then something sweet, and then it's
mm-hmm.
you know, something much easier to down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than a spoonful of castor oil.
Yeah, and then we took that and ran with it in the 20s.
Yeah.
So gin-soaked raisins help arthritis. That's kind of what she's getting out there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to read
or not?
A spell, or?
Do I want to read a spell?
Yeah, just one.
Spooky spell.
Oh, okay.
Pick one.
So.
Yeah.
So Here's one for to create energetic wards.
Okay.
So it's mm-hmm. what you do once you've cleared your space of unwanted energy. So you purify your house. You can create wards that will continue to clear ground and protect the energy of your sacred space. And it's one of the easiest ways to create a powerful ward for your home is to use black tourmaline, which is a very powerful protection stone.
Oh, we're getting into crystals. Yeah.
Speaking of, while we were in San Antonio, I finally was able to find a piece of raw, unpolished black obsidian.
He was very excited.
Nice.
Not the snowflake obsidian, nothing like that, just pure obsidian. So it's got like the striations, the whorls. You can see the grain structure. Oh, I was so excited.
Isn't that really hard to find?
Apparently, because I've been looking for like 20 years.
For years.
Yeah, I've heard that it's hard to find.
I've looked in Hawaii. I've looked in Costa Rica. Like,
but obsidian is also the stone where like you can pretty much create a knife out of it if you like shave it real thin,
yeah,
right?
If you do the napping.
That's why I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah.
I watched a TikTok guy about that and like he's like, you know, hitting it apart, creating these like little tiny like glass shards essentially. And everybody in the comments are like, how are you not wearing gloves for this? They were like all about the safety because like it was like so sharp, you know?
Yeah.
Well, in Central American culture, they have that weapon, the macuatil, which is a wooden club that they put like either pieces of mica or pieces of obsidian in there. And it makes a shredding club. So like you'll hit someone with it and it's serrated and sharp. So you'll rip through them with it. And I've been obsessed.
Aztec weapon or Mayan weapon?
Yes.
Okay.
There's evidence of both both cultures having them. And I think even some Native American cultures had weapons similar to that.
Okay.
But
anyway.
You never have to sharpen them. You just have to replace the teeth as they chip. You know.
Welcome to Mother Nature will give you crystals to help heal you and
murder your enemies.
Your enemies, yeah.
Viscerally.
All right. Keep going, crystal girly.
So it takes about 30 minutes to do this. You need a dried rosemary or cedar bundle for burning. You need a fire safe dish, a feather or wing fan, four black tourmaline pieces, and lighter or matches.
Okay.
So it's best to perform this ritual right. That's a tongue twister for me. It is best to perform this ritual right after a cleansing ceremony. Once you have cleansed the entire space, return to the ground floor with the rosemary bundle burning in its dish, the feather, and black tourmaline. Light the rosemary bundle again if it goes out. Intuitively, choose one of the corners of the ground floor to begin. You will move in a counterclockwise motion from that corner. Standing in front of the first corner, hold a piece of the black tourmaline in the smoke, calling on the allies by name and intention. Black tourmaline and rosemary for protection, cleansing of the sacred space. Place the crystal in the corner and then fan the smoke onto the crystal and then up the corner until you reach the ceiling. Repeat your intention and move counterclockwise to the next corner until all four corners are complete. Once all four crystals have been placed, move into the center of the room with the fire safe dish in your hands. Spin three times in a counterclockwise motion while repeating your intention. When you wish to cleanse your sacred space again, the first step is to collect the black tourmaline from the corners, place them in the fire safe dish until the cleansing ceremony is completed. Then you can recreate this ward using the same crystals.
Sounds like you need to get some black tourmaline so you can do this after you sage your house.
I've looked for some, but I want it to be that pure black tourmaline. I don't want that like crystal
not that
shop
snowflake,
fake shit.
Not that No, it's got
to
be.
Trust me, I've looked because it's supposed to ward off bad energy. And like, I feel like I got a lot of negative energy around me recently. So I'm like, I want to just
get it out.
You know, get it all out.
Yeah.
And like, also carry it with me so it like fucks other people up, you know? Like, don't
fuck
me up. So
both are crystal girlies.
I'm turning into
I got
them.
A whole bowl of crystals in my room.
Golden retrieval crystal girlies.
Yes.
And here's me, the black cat with her damn facts sitting in the corner.
I need to wear crystals when I play video games because I get so angry at those.
So I have the two of the crystals I have are like the thumb stones where like it's got the thumbprint in there so you can like hold it and just like, you know, it's like,
oh, like a worry stone.
Yeah. Just like rub it. Mm-hmm. One's jade and one's rose quartz. So
I'll just tape those onto my game controller's thumbsticks.
There you go.
Yeah. Just
like, yeah.
Speaking of game controllers, we got our Nintendo 64 to work, and that has like been the highlight of my week.
I was gonna ask you about that because yeah. I saw that you're having trouble with TikTok on TikTok getting it started.
Oh yeah, so happy things. You want
that? Yeah, so that's a happy thing. Yeah, sorry, I just kind of like just
no, that's fine.
Pole vaulted myself into the happy thing, but like we don't have to go there just yet. But yeah, I did get that figured out. And I think what happened was we had a bad adapter. Like we just bought, it was like bad luck. We just bought an adapter that wasn't working. Just bought a lemon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I just bought another one and it worked and it's so exciting.
Oh, good.
What games do you have?
Girl, we got Mario Kart. We got Mario Party. We got GoldenEye, Zelda, Wave Runner. We got Donkey Kong.
Mm-hmm.
We got Super Smash Brothers. You know, like kind of all the classics. I had like a whole shoebox of games at my parents, and Alex had some down here in his storage. So like when he took all the stuff out of his storage unit, we were going through it. So he has his Nintendo 64 unit, and we tried it here first with that adapter. It didn't work. So then when I was home, I brought mine back, and then mine didn't work with that adapter. And I was like, I know for sure that mine works because like it was sitting in my room at my parents' house. And like, I would have it plugged in like a couple years ago when I was, you know, like living there, and like his had been like in storage. So I was like, oh, maybe like, I don't know, like something got messed up with his, but like mine should freaking work. And TVs now, like they're so new and like upgraded that like the Nintendo 64 just won't work if you like, plug it right into the TV. So we got this adapter, and then that's when I was saying like we tried it with both of our units and it didn't work, and I was like, it's so freaking weird. Like, and I was like googling things, I was on Reddit, I was watching YouTube videos, like everybody was like saying to use an adapter, and I was like, we have the freaking adapter though and it's not working. And so then the other day he was like working a long shift, and I was like, I was doing a deep clean of the house, and I was like, I am hell bent on getting this thing to work. And so I took to TikTok and I was like, somebody help me. Cause like everybody, honestly though, like I feel like I'm going to start using TikTok for people to answer my questions because like people are on it all the time, like solving other people's problems, like not medically obviously, but like, if you're like, hey, like I'm trying to build this thing, like, does anybody have like a good tool to recommend for this? Mm-hmm. And then like somebody will be like, oh, I use this one, and like, you know, here's this video of how I did it, blah 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 blah, you know. So I knew TikTok would come through, so I did it.
Yeah
And it worked.
It's the new like Ask Jeeves or Google Answers or whatever.
Yeah.
Yes.
Occam's Razor. Usually the most obvious answer
is the right one.
The correct one.
Yes. Yeah. People are like, is it plugged in? I was like, yes, it's fucking plugged in. You know, like.
Is it plugged into the wall? My N64 didn't come with a wall.
Yeah. So that is a happy thing for me for sure. I did that. And the other happy thing is this puppy. That puppy is nice. And she's over there just napping on her bed, being a good girl.
So cute. Yeah. She's so freaking cute.
Yeah. I do love her. I told Alex, like, I want to foster dogs, like, occasionally. Cause, like, his, like I said, his friend's, like, the manager up at the SPCA. So I'm like, you know, she knows us. She knows how our dog is. So she would know if, like, any of those ones that they get in could be, like, a good fit, you know?
That is helpful.
I'm like, I'm really down to foster some dogs because, like, I kind of want a second dog, but, like, Alex is like, that's, you know, too much financially. If we go out of town, it's like double the dog sitter, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, well, how about if we just like foster them on our own time? You know, like if we have like a busy couple of months, like we don't have to foster one for a couple of months. You know what I mean? So,
Yeah, I know you would do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, we've talked about doing that because I think I would be able to do it.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't be able to let him go. They'd be our second dog immediately.
Yeah.
Unless they really were annoying, then maybe I could let him
go. I don't know. I don't know. I think your love for your capacity to love annoying dogs way outweighs your capacity to love me. So.
I do really love dogs. I mean,
yeah, me too.
I really love you, but also I really love dogs. Do you have a happy thing?
I mean, we got to see Britt and Jack this week.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen them since Christmas 2 years ago.
I saw them in February.
I haven't seen them since Christmas 2 years ago.
Yep.
So it's been a while. They were road tripping through the American Southwest because Britt, her dad gave her a Subaru, his old Subaru.
Oh, nice.
So she's
a Subaru.
A Subaru.
Subaru.
So she was picking that up. So they flew out there and they were driving back and they stopped in San Antonio.
Yeah, so we were able to hop up there.
Mm-hmm.
My coworkers were cool with me dipping out
mm-hmm.
half good. Saturday and all of Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, so it was good. It was fun. We did the river walk. We went to a bunch of breweries. We ate some good food.
I brought my bottle of bourbon and I was just like taking swigs of it as we're walking on the river walk. And Jack was looking around like, we're going to get in trouble. I was like, dude, it's Texas.
It's Texas.
Like, I was going to say, you can do that?
Well, not really, but that's the least of their concern.
Mm-hmm. That's probably true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like we went and got ice cream and I poured like some bourbon into my ice cream cup. And Jack was like, really? And I was like, you want to try it? He's like, I mean, yeah.
But also, really? Yeah.
Aww. Yeah. So that was good. I guess besides that, my happy thing is that I have started doing some new and different field work that I thought was fun, even though it exhausted me.
What is it?
My coworker and I are starting to set light traps to catch larval fish. She has done it for like grad school, and so she's really familiar with it. She's really good at taking pictures of the larval fish, which
yeah.
I love photos of larval fish. They're so interesting to look at. They're very cool because they look so different than like the adults, and they're often like very pretty.
Or creepy.
Or creepy.
Pretty or creepy.
Yeah, but it's interesting nonetheless. And so so we set our first thing of light traps out, and it was just really nice. I don't know why, but I really enjoy nighttime field work.
Oh,
it like kind of put me back in that place of doing nighttime field work.
Yeah, you
know, like I did on the NOAA long line that I went on that trip. So I was on the night watch. I don't know why. I guess I'm a night person. It's like
more peaceful.
Very peaceful for me. And the cool thing about these light traps, they're essentially like crab traps, but they use the light as the bait.
Yeah.
And
like a fish light, like the green light.
Yeah, because A, fish use light to see what they're hunting, and B, larval fish use the moon phases, like photo period of moon phase, to kind of trigger their migration.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just really cool, and it was fun, and we're going to keep doing it because I'm trying to catch some larval croaker.
Nice.
And she's just trying to catch everything, see what's out there and see what the different larval communities look like throughout the year, because we don't really have a lot of information about that in Texas. There's not a lot of people doing work on that, so that was fun.
Cool.
Yeah, and then it's spooky season and I just love that. So
yeah, we're going to the witch's ball
mm-hmm.
in 2 weekends.
Oh, here. That's right. Yeah, you guys have your costumes.
We are definitely in a much better place than we were
last year.
Yeah, I'm gonna work on it probably a little bit today. But we're getting there. We're getting there. I think we pretty much have everything together. Nice.
We've got everything put together, we just have to put it together.
We just need to craft a few more things.
Yeah.
But we got the big pieces
done,
which is good. So we'll take.
And I actually helped this year.
You did. We'll take pictures of it. We'll post it and everything, because I think, this episode will come out before we go. But by the time we record the next episode, we will have just come back from that. So
nice.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So anything else? Well,
no, I can tell you guys where to find us if you're ready to shut it down.
Yeah, we got 4 minutes. So
we can do it. You guys can find us on social media on Facebook at Mother Nature Will Kill You, Instagram at Mother Nature Will Kill You Podcast, on TikTok at MNWKY podcast. And then we have our website, mothernaturewillkillyoupodcast.com. And then you can listen to us on any streaming platform. So Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts. And our website. You can listen to us there as well.
And if you have climbed Mount Washington, or if you have seen a not deer, we want to hear about it.
But if you've just had an uncomfy experience in nature, maybe you saw a weird deer on the trail, or maybe you climbed a different mountain that wasn't Mount Washington and it was really scary or difficult, we want to hear about that too. So you can submit that either to our story page that we have on our website, where you can just submit stories, or to our email. In addition, if you want to support the podcast but don't have any money because we live in a post-capitalist hellscape, you can give us a 5-star review on any of our listening platforms. And so this was our big spooky season episode. I do have one more in store before the season closes out. It's gonna be a really fun time. It's gonna make everyone's skin crawl this next episode.
I can't wait.
All right, so with that,
all right, until next time, stay safe, but most of all,
stay curious, explorer.
Goodbye.
Bye.